We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. I'm doing my happy dance. You can't see it. You probably don't want to see it. Michael McNamara looks like an idiot with a unibrow painted across his face.
I still He's have it on, baby.
We have just won. I'm saying we, not the New Orleans Hornets. We have just won the number one pick of the 2012 draft and the rights to draft Anthony Davis, the man who Michael McNamara says will be better than Michael Jordan.
No, Kevin Garnett. He'll be a better team owner and GM than Michael Jordan.
We're just kind of giddy with happiness at this moment. At the moment, I mean, number one pick. I didn't believe it was happening. I was watching that thing, and as soon as I was getting really nervous right around the eighth or the seventh pick, I was expecting to see some team get skipped, and that meant the Hornets were going to fall to the fifth pick or to the sixth pick, and I was getting all dread. And then those passed, and they pulled out the Cleveland Cavaliers at four, and I was jumping up and down, and I ran up and down, and I called and made all my kids come up who don't really care about basketball and watch while the rest of the lotteries played out. And number one.
So what do you think's worse? Because anybody who's watching the vocal could see that I was incredibly nervous those last couple minutes. I just wanted it to get over with. So we had those couple of minutes. Dell Demps, I just got off the conference call with him, and he got the news an hour before it was announced, and he had to sit in that room
really
and hold it in for an hour. He already knew, and it was a pretty cool story what he said. He said, I guess the winning combo was, I might get this wrong, I tweeted it, but these are my new favorite numbers, so I don't know why I don't know it. But I believe the winning combo was 4967.
Yes, 4967 is what you tweeted.
Right, and Dell knew that, so the 4 comes up, the 9 comes up, the 6 comes up. So he's looking at his little cheat sheet, and he knows he needs the 7. He sees the last ball pop up, and he said it looked like a 1, and his heart just hit the ground. And then he turned it, and, you know, the ball got turned, and he saw it was a 7, and he basically let out a little tiger, you know, it's a bunch of, you know, basically aside from him, a bunch of stuffy old white men in suits. And he let out a little Tiger Woods fist pump and a whoa. But then now he has to hold that in for the next hour. Call his BFF Monty. I mean, you want to talk about, you know, us being nervous. Could you imagine him and just having to hold that in and the thoughts that went through his mind over that hour in that small little room?
That I had no idea that they actually let the information out before they opened the envelopes. I really had no idea. Yeah. I figured like a few people in the league office might know, and that was it.
It's a small little room, and they have one representative from the team allowed in, and he's just in there and he can't leave. They check all the phones at the door. So yeah, I mean, we were a little nervous, but I mean, Dell had that news before anybody else, and he just had to hold it in. But even on the conference call, he was very non-committal. Didn't want to talk about who he might or might not take. He's just going to bring the guys in and work them out. But, I mean, come on. Is there any chance that Anthony Davis is not a Hornet on June 28th?
In the workout with the Hornets, he suffers a career-altering injury. Or they measure his legs, and one leg is 3 inches too short.
Yeah, even then I still take. I mean,
yeah, I know he's still going number one.
And then, so I asked a question a couple days ago. I said if the Hornets win this, you know, lottery, where does this rank as far as all time Hornets days? And most people put it second or third behind the selling of the team. You know, when we announced that the Hornets had sold the team or that Benson was buying, there was a little reaction. People are going absolutely nuts for this. I mean, to me, the only way he doesn't become an all-timer is if we have a Greg Oden situation. So if he becomes the player that we think he could be, is this the biggest single day in Hornets franchise history?
No. I think it's tied with one other when they won LJ.
Really?
I got to go back to that because that team wasn't that very good. The same sort of situation we're in now, and you know people forget that. But LJ, you got to remember when he was coming out of college, same sort of hype. I mean, even more because he looked like he was 47 years old. Expected him to dominate every person out there. So I will go back that far and say LJ had the same sort of impact as Anthony. Other than that, absolutely, all that stuff about, you know, Tom Benson buying the team or getting rid of Jeff Bauer or whatever, you know, that's not why we watch basketball. I don't watch basketball because I care who the owner is or I care who the general manager is, except for in the context of will he screw up my team. I watch it to see the players. And when you get a game changer like Anthony Davis, there's no way you can say that that is less exciting than Tom Benson bought the team. I just can't. I can't buy that.
Yeah, no. To me, it's the biggest, and maybe I wouldn't feel this way if I lived in New Orleans. I understand people saying the fact that either the day the team was brought to New Orleans or the day that it was secure here. But to me, you know, if this just is another irrelevant franchise, if this is the Milwaukee Bucks, if this is, you know, not putting anybody down, but a team that has no chance at winning a title, I guess to me, I don't really care about any of this stuff. You know, this makes the Hornets a relevant franchise, again, save for a Greg Oden situation. So to me, you know, I think the same way that Spurs fans look back to the day that they won the lottery in 1997. I think this, an average Spurs fan would say that was the biggest day in their history. I think it's going to be the same, same for the Hornets. And I personally think he's this good that I would be surprised if the Hornets do not have an NBA championship in the next 6 years. And, you know, I didn't even feel that way when we had CP3.
It's true. I don't think I ever thought that way, even after, you know, he's setting all kinds of records as a rookie. So I mean, here's the weirdest thing. This is what Anthony Davis, and this is what I really was trying to stop myself to think about. I never really talked about it. I was trying to avoid it. I was trying to condition myself 5-10, 5-10, 5-10. We're not going to get better than that. So why even, you know, think about it? Okafor, in my mind, has just gone from being somebody that has to be gone no matter what to I'm fine with Okafor being on our team.
Yeah. Like, I mean, 2 years while Davis is growing, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, we now have a starting front line of Okafor and Davis that will average about 15, 16 million, backed up by Jason Smith, who's around for another couple of years. and backed up by Ione, who's around for another couple of years. We have our top four big men right now. And I'm fine with Jason Smith being backup center. I'm fine with Ione being backup power forward. This result, Carl Landry, goodbye. I don't think there's any consideration that Landry stays now, do you?
No, and see, I'm not even really thinking about the next 2 years. I mean, just as far as who stays on this team, I really don't know if there's one person on this roster that I think is going to still be here when Anthony Davis is helping the team compete for titles. So I guess I'm not as concerned with that, but I do agree that Okafor is more likely to stay, only because he could fit with Davis. And I think this actually puts the Hornets on a slower track to kind of building the team. If they get 5-10, I still maintain that they would have been actively looking at the vet market. I think now you have a face of your future. He's only 19 years old. You know, he's going to develop. He plays a different position, but like Durant was rookie of the year, but he wasn't fantastic. Took them 3 years to get into the playoffs. He'll be going along that pace. So I'm willing to take that pace. And yeah, if that means that, you know, I'm just using Okafor to kind of fill my cap space to reach that cap floor, that's fine, but I don't think Okafor is here long term. But I do agree he's more likely to be here next year than if they would add picks 5 and 10.
Right. And so here's the thing. On one hand, we have no decision to make about our number one pick. So, you know, Thomas Robinson, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and, Bradley Beal. I'm glad I don't even have to worry about them anymore.
Yeah, but it makes it a little. I mean,
we still got number 10
content. I could have wrote a different article every day. You know, now that I know it's Anthony Davis, they really got to be Anthony Davis centric articles. But you know, I'm willing to sacrifice that just to have a potential dynasty. But I don't know. I'm so excited, and honestly, I feel like when those people get up and give Oscar speeches and they say that, you know, I didn't expect this. I don't know what I'm going to say. Like, I always think that's BS, but I feel that way right now. Like, I always come to these podcasts prepared with notes because, you know, I think of every possible scenario. I could honestly say I really haven't given this scenario much thought. So I kind of don't know where to start with this. My first inclination is to talk about, you know, I think we're going to get into a bunch of the positives. So just to kind of temper Hornets fans' expectations, I mean, the only thing I could really think of is I think when most people think of a star, they think of highlight offensive plays and high scoring. And, you know, I think the very knowledgeable Hornets fans won't expect that from Davis, but, you know, I think that might be a little bit of a transition for the casual fan. I mean, do you think that a fan base could get excited about defense?
Well, I mean, if you go look at any sort of Kentucky blog for the past year, yes. I mean, those people were in love with Anthony Davis more than anybody else on that team. And I mean, he affects everything so much. And, I mean, he's not exactly devoid of highlight reels. I mean, what, like 60% of his offense, I believe, was at the rim dunks. So, I mean, this makes me wish so badly that CP3 is still around. Can you imagine Davis playing the pick and roll with Chris Paul?
Can you imagine Chris Paul coming back next summer? Because I can.
Well, see, that's my whole thing here is I'm trying. I actually made a joke to my buddy who's a Chris Paul fan, followed Chris Paul to the Clippers, although he says he hates most of the Clippers except for Chauncey Billups and Chris Paul. I kept telling him, I'm like, well, you know what? As soon as we get Anthony Davis, Chris Paul's coming back after this year.
I mean, honestly, if you're Chris Paul, you got Vinny Del Negro coming back.
Right, another year of Vinny. I actually started to write a post about how that would be helpful to bring Chris Paul back, but then I was like, that's stupid to think Chris Paul's coming back. We're not going to have Anthony Davis.
Right, but okay, so the Hornets could get to a point financially where I mean, they will have enough money next summer to give Chris Paul a max deal. If you're Chris Paul, you see Eric Gordon and Anthony Davis locked in for the next 4 or 5 years. You got a coach and GM that you love in Monty and Dell Demps. And on the other side, you have Blake Griffin and an overpaid DeAndre Jordan and a black hole, a Dell black hole, a Del Negro hole at, oh, Dell, you know, Negro, black, Adele black hole at coach. I mean, honestly, just looking at the two situations, if Anthony Davis looks like the next Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, you know, whatever, after this rookie year, how do you not come back to the city that you love with a, you know, coach and GM that you love if it's just purely for basketball reasons?
Yeah, no, I just don't disagree. I mean, so let's get past that fantasy and get to more reality. Because it is a little bit of fantasy.
Well, can we go back in time and talk about the Chris Paul trades at least?
Okay,
can we
sure.
Put to an end this idea. Is there any chance now that anybody in the world could make the case that the Hornets should have taken the Lakers trade?
Well, if you knew this. I mean, yeah, you could still make that case.
Oh, no.
Absolutely, but of course, I mean, you can't make that knowing you're going to win the lottery.
But you knew you were going to be bad in this situation.
Yeah, we had a 14.8% chance to win.
And we would have had a 0.5% chance, just like the Rockets had this year, if we would have taken that trade.
It's probably true.
I mean...
Or we would have had the honor of being the first four wins of the Spurs in their run to the championship.
Right. So, I mean, to me, this is... This just, you know, eventually, I mean, this just has to squash that, and just another reason for Hornets fans to thank David Stern. I don't think one person has done more for New Orleans basketball than he did over those 18 to 20 months.
Now, make sure that when the All-Star game comes to New Orleans, you know, make sure you can find a way to meet David Stern and you can grovel before him.
All right, so getting to Anthony Davis.
Right.
Over the next couple of years into his prime, I don't care where people start. I've always said, I don't care if you're a starter. I care about, where you finish. With this new league where it's kind of, I think it's moving towards small ball, in the last 5 minutes of games, once Anthony Davis, hits his prime, really gets a feel for the NBA game, what position is he going to be playing at the end of games?
It doesn't matter. But let me put it this way. He will be playing power forward or center, and it'll all depend on the matchup. That's just the way the NBA works. I mean, if he's going against the, San Antonio Spurs, I don't know if you'd put him up against Tim Duncan straight up. You would probably try to slide him to power forward. But if he's going up against, the Oklahoma City Thunder. He could play center just fine against that team.
I think he could cover Durant.
He could do either. I don't know if you want him. I mean, Durant's been playing a lot of power forward in that actual series.
Right.
In that case, yeah, you'd have him power forward covering Durant. He has the flexibility to cover three spots, which is very nice. I mean, and he's like Kevin Garnett in that way. Maybe this is in the podcast that didn't actually get posted because of audio difficulties. Garnett, I remember when I – what's that?
It was a sign that we had to wait a couple more days. We were being patient. They destroyed our audio, so we would never – they would never hear us talking about the fact that we thought the Hornets would get other picks.
Right. So you got to remember, like – I was watching, I forget what year it was, 2001 maybe or 2002 All-Star game. And I remember this too when I was watching basketball and when I was like drafting guys for my fantasy teams. Kevin Garnett, there was strong discussion. Is Kevin Garnett a small forward or a power forward? People hadn't decided yet.
Mm-hmm.
And now you look at him and he's like, there's no question he's been a power forward his whole career. But he hasn't been. For a long time, he was a small forward. And I think, Anthony Davis has the same sort of build, although I think he can probably put on a little bit more muscle than Garnett ever has. I don't even know if you want him to. I mean, as Thorpe said, he likes the rail thin, like the whip cord players.
Yeah.
So is that a nickname for him? Whipcord?
Yeah.
Come up with a good nickname. Because unibrow is not going to work.
Yeah, I know. How about
it's kind of backhanded.
And we can't really do anything with the teeth.
Come on now. And next thing you're going to say is him and Gustavo Ayón. Woo!
I'm seriously going to put their pictures on one of those sites where you can see what their baby would look like. But okay, well then, yeah, let's forget about present. Well, so to me, it's funny that you brought up Kevin Garnett and Anthony Davis was on this uber talented team. Most people, including the guys that we talked to over at a UK blog, said that Anthony Davis probably could have been a 20-22 per point per game guy on a less talented team. My question, though, is the first 8 to 10 years of Kevin Garnett's career, what was the rap? It was that he was a little too unselfish. Are you at all worried about that, in Anthony Davis's game, that he just seems like too much of a team guy, that he might be, a little unselfish?
I, you know what? That's just nitpicking. I don't really care. I mean, the dude, in his first year in college, he averaged on a team that loaded, he averaged 14.5 points. And I another part of the podcast that that we left out there was my comparison where I actually preferred Dikembe Mutombo to Alonzo Mourning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, scoring isn't the end all be all for me.
Right.
I mean, if you look at the Spurs this year, I still think Tim Duncan is the most important player on that team, and he's only playing 30 minutes a game, and Parker is lighting people up.
Right.
But I still think Tim Duncan is the most important player on that team, and so. I think unselfishness is contagious. It'll help the other players on the team pass more. It'll help the other team players get the right shots. I think having it when it's your best player just does. I mean, it's leading by example, and I cannot say that that is a bad thing.
Yeah, and I mean we're gonna get a little ahead of ourselves. We'll come back to this later, but. That's, I think you know who I want the Hornets to take at number 10. And to me, you know, you talk about Duncan and we talk about Garnett. When they were their most successful, it's when they had kind of selfish guys at the guard position. I mean, Garnett's most successful years in Minnesota was that Sam Cassell, Latrell Sprewell mm-hmm. partnership where you kind of had what Bill Simmons calls irrational confidence guys. At the guard positions who maybe weren't the best guys point per shot wise, but they just were able to be selfish and let Garnett play his game. Same with Duncan. So, what type of team, if he's the centerpiece that you think he is, I think he is, just you could give me specific players, you could give me positions, but forget about what the Hornets have on the team right now. How are you building this team over the next 5 years to fit his talents?
I'm drafting I am getting a guard who can run the pick and roll like a beast.
Is that not Eric Gordon?
Eric Gordon can do that. I haven't looked at the synergy numbers to see how good he is.
Two years ago, he was one of the three best players in the league at pick and roll.
2 years ago, so before Blake Griffin?
No. Blake Griffin's first year. This year 1 year, and then
okay.
So the year before, his last year on the Clippers.
Well, I mean, then, yeah, he's perfect for this if he could stay healthy.
Right.
But, I mean, Kendall Marshall would be perfect at that, too.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other players. There's lots of players who can run the pick and roll. This is, I mean, there's always Steve Nash, Chris Paul, they can run the pick and roll better than anybody else. I mean, there are a lot of guys who can run the pick and roll, but that would be a particular skill I was looking for. And I would actually want to put next to him at the center, just a guy who does the dirty work and is tough. Okafor is not that. I mean, I said before, I'm fine with Okafor sticking around. Okafor is not a tough guy. He's not an enforcer. He's not going to protect Davis if people are going after him. And you better believe people will be going after Davis. And I don't know if he's got the hint of crazy that Kevin Garnett had that made people not really want to go after Kevin Garnett. So, I mean, I think you got to get a big man who's kind of tough and just does, you know, does the dirty work for you. I think of like Dale Davis kind of thing for people who actually paid attention to basketball 10 years ago.
Dale Davis's family who happened to be listening.
Right. And Ariza's probably fine, and Ariza's style players next to him at small forward. I mean, I expect Davis to be able to put up 18 points a game within the next couple of years pretty regularly. So you can actually have a good defender who's complementary offensively. Although, I will say I have a post coming out pretty soon about Ariza, and his defensive numbers were not what they were yet last year. That's a side point. We're talking about Anthony Davis now.
And how about, I mean, so you talk about some dirty work guys. How about veterans? I mean, Anthony Davis, again, he is 19. I think we all expect him to be the future leader of this team. But when Duncan came in, you know, he had David Robinson to look up to. With that in mind, would you bring in some kind of, grizzled veterans who maybe aren't as talented, but that could show him the ropes? Do you just kind of let him learn that on his own? What would be your ideas as far as what kind of teammates to put around him to kind of help his growing process?
I don't know enough about the players' personalities to be able to give you a good person to do that. I've read a whole lot of basketball books over the last 3 or 4 years, and the one truth I've gotten from all of them is that veterans are not happy when you come in and you're young and you're talented and you're going to play the same sort of position they play.
Right.
They're not really there to make you better. They're there to keep you from taking their job because you're going to cost them millions of dollars. So I honestly don't think it matters that much. I mean, just take a look. I mean, if you take a look at Oklahoma City, the one veteran they've had all along is Nick Collison. I mean, do you think Nick Collison has been teaching those guys how to play the right way?
No, I don't think as much on the court as much being professional off the court.
Yeah, you got Monty. I mean, that's Monty's job. That's Monty and his assistant coach's job. And basically, if a kid is going to get it and be professional, they're going to learn that from those guys. They're not going to learn that from the other players. Now, of course, there can be distractions. I wouldn't suggest we go out and, you know, get – well, you know, DeMarcus Cousins on the team or something.
Yeah. He's always the guy that comes up. I feel bad. Speaking of feeling bad, is there any part of you
no.
that feel bad for the Charlotte Bobcats?
I knew that was coming. And no.
For a split second, probably we're thinking we could get Anthony Davis and be relevant, and now you just know they're going to take Andre Drummond. I mean, you know that, right?
Right.
Do we even have to wait? Can we just say that – could we hand that pick in along – with the Hornets one right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just hope Andre Drummond goes into Charlotte and he says, I'm country strong. Cause that's what Kwame Brown said to Michael Jordan that impressed Jordan so much. Apparently he said he didn't need to work out cause he's just country strong. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? This guy just told you he doesn't work out. And you're like, number one pick.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just can't. I mean, talk about two franchises just both at the bottom going in different directions. Do you believe in any karma? I mean, I know we were on the podcast screaming for the Hornets to lose, but they played hard down to the very end. Do you believe that the fact that, you know, they actually played to the end while Charlotte, you know, just tanked the entire season? You believe in karma at all, or?
Are you no? You're really asking me these questions?
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm one of those guys. As soon as anything supernatural or spiritual or anything like that comes up, I roll my eyes. So no.
Yeah.
No, it's just pure luck of the draw.
And that Marco Bellinelli game against Golden State doesn't feel so bad now, does it?
Well, I wasn't the one who went, you know, and crawled into the bed in a fetal position and sobbed for the next 3 hours.
I will say, though, if the Hornets win that last game against Houston, they're probably picking fifth right now instead of first.
That's right.
So, yeah, it's delicate.
I haven't read your post yet.
Okay.
I saw that you put up just, you know, just recently the post lottery mock draft.
All right. Well, then I'll start with you since I already put mine out there. I'll start with you. What are your initial thoughts with the 10th pick?
I want to go one of two directions. Solinger's out for me now. I like Solinger. I just don't think you. I mean, I don't think he'll fit particularly well next to Anthony Davis, which it's kind of weird to say that, but it's true. So I'm actually trying to look for actually a point guard. That's another post that I'm coming out with of Jarrett Jack and his weaknesses and strengths. So I know point guard's not particularly strong in this, and you know Lillard is one of those boom or bust guys, and Kendall Marshall has a lot of weaknesses and probably is better suited for like an Eric Maynor kind of backup role. But I would probably still go for one of those two guys. Or I'm still a little intrigued by John Henson. Just two ultra-athletic forwards who can block shots, play tight defense. You can have them play next to each other. You can rotate them in and out. You get John Henson and Anthony Davis. You can send Trevor Ariza packing and not worry about that. You have Al-Farouq Aminu. You'll have, like, the three longest freaks who can rebound like mad out there at any one time. And I'm a little intrigued with that idea.
Yeah, I got.
And now I haven't read it, so let me make the guess. I'm going to guess at who you picked.
Well, I've already said it in a previous column who his perfect pair would be. So go ahead, try with your miracle guess.
Well, now you made me seem like a schmuck.
Well, I didn't make you, but
it's Austin Rivers, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Oh God, you're so wrong. He's like bad Bradley Beal, and I don't like Bradley Beal.
I think me, it's a basketball fit. Like I said, Austin Rivers on most teams, I'm not in love with.
You can find a shooting guard who shoots too much and doesn't do anything else well in on any team and pay them the same amount of money you're going to be paying the 10th pick.
I disagree. I mean, I don't know why people are so absolutely down on him. I mean, this was the guy who he was the number two player on most lists coming in, you know, this year as a freshman behind Anthony Davis, number three on some. But look at Russell Westbrook's numbers at UCLA. They're horrible. They're absolutely horrible. He went to a team that couldn't have been a worse fit for a guy who was, you know, an explosive scoring guard. Austin Rivers, I don't love on most teams. I'm telling you, I've said that in almost no other situation would I have had Austin Rivers going to the Hornets. But again, I look at people similar to Anthony Davis, Kevin Garnett, Tim Duncan, and I look at what their formula for success was, and it was when they had kind of those volume scoring, you know, penetrating guards that maybe gambled too much on the defensive end, but they had one of the best defenders in the nation, you know, in the league to back them up. I just think all of Rivers' weaknesses are kind of washed away by Davis. Rivers, I mean, I could see Davis getting Chicago Bull points. And Chicago Bull points are Derrick Rose drives to the basket, draws two or three people, misses a shot, and then that's why the Bulls lead the league in offensive rebounding every year. Austin Rivers is that guy. I just think specifically as a compliment for Anthony Davis and in almost no other situation – but Austin Rivers is absolutely a perfect match in this league where you have a high volume, high scoring six man coming off the bench on almost every good team. Manu Ginobili, Leandro Barbosa, Jason Terry, now James Harden. That has been the formula for these great teams in the West these past couple of years. I just repeat it with Austin Rivers.
I don't know. I mean, he's got all the wrong markers in my book. I mean,
yeah,
he can't.
He grew up around the game of basketball with a coach that's one of the two or three best coaches.
See, you keep saying that he's got, you know, he's the son of a coach, like that actually helps him. If he's the son of the coach, why did he take so many rock stupid shots this year? Why does he average 2.5 turnovers a game?
And I think it takes a guy with courage to take those kinds of shots. I don't see anybody else on Duke stepping up to take them.
Yeah,
I mean,
I don't know. He worries me. I'll throw out why he worries me more than anything else. Especially if the idea is that he might be playing some time with Eric Gordon. He was a horrible rebounder. And I actually said this about the Marco post that, you know, Marco was a terrible rebounder. There was one person on the Hornets team who was the worst, was a worse rebounder, and by the way, was the worst rebounding player in the NBA. Worse than Nate Robinson, worse than short people, worse than Squeaky Johnson, and that was Eric Gordon.
And the main Eric does not matter because I have Anthony Davis back then. But
it does matter. I mean, so Anthony Davis gets you 12 rebounds instead of 10 rebounds.
And
okay?
Mecca Okafor or Omar Asik or whoever I got there at center.
It doesn't – I mean, you have to – I don't want to draft a player who has major – I mean, he's not like minorly underperforming. He's majorly underperforming at this. So anyways, so he can't rebound. He is a much worse passer. He gets two assists and gets more turnovers. But my biggest problem with him is if you're drafting him to be one of your shooters to take the big shots, one of the biggest marks for people coming out of college who turn into good shooters, even if they're not in college, is their free throw percentage. And he shot 66% from the free throw line last year. And he didn't take it on a small number. I mean, he actually got 5 free throws a game, which normally I'd be saying, he's a shooting guard who got 5 free throws a game in college, that's pretty good. But when you take 5 free throws a game and you can't hit them very well, that's the biggest red flag for me if I want him to be a shooting scorer for me. So that's my take.
Yeah,
I don't like Austin Rivers. Screw him.
And again, you're judging a guy.
I would rather take Lillard.
Draft, Lillard is gone, so I'll give you the other guys that I have. I do have 3 alternative options of guys who are still there. I think Lillard will be gone by 10, but I want nothing to do with him anyway. Other options, a guy you brought up, Kendall Marshall, basically said that Davis is going to need easy buckets in his first year or two. And again, Marshall's weakness is, you know, his lateral quickness on defense, another thing that Davis negates, so I'd be fine with Marshall. Terrence Jones, what better way to make Davis feel at home than to bring along one of his buddies? You know, you got a stretch guy. You know, they could play 4 and 5 together. When they go small, they could play 3 and 4 together. And then I disagree with you on Sullinger. I was actually listening to a podcast today in which one of the experts came on and said that especially in this era where you only have 2 or 3 really quality offensive centers, he could see Jared Sullinger playing a lot of 5 with, you know, those legs of his and that big butt being able
to. Is he big enough to be a center? I mean, I thought he was like 6'8".
But again, you're talking about convention. I mean, I don't know. I don't know who's technically playing the center when Sullinger and Davis are on the court. But yeah, if they're playing OKC and OKC has Durant and Ibaka, you know, and I've got Sullinger and Davis, I'm fine with that. You know, how many times if you put Sullinger and Davis at the 4 and 5, are you really going to be grossly overmatched? Maybe. I mean, if you're going against Brooke Lopez, are you really that concerned?
Yeah, you're turning me around on that one, I think.
Right. So to me, those are my alternatives. If you don't like Rivers, I could be sold on any of those guys. Lillard, you know, I actually got quoted on ESPN today because I happened to point out those numbers when Lillard played against real competition. And I just don't see. I know Hornets fans are so starved for offense that right. They want the number 2 scorer in the nation. But I don't get it. I don't. To me, if Austin Rivers goes to Weber State, he averages 30 a game on better numbers. I just don't get the appeal with Lillard, other than the fact that he might be the best player at the worst position in this year's draft.
So you want so Davis and Rivers is a perfectly reasonable one because Rivers is thinking like 13. What would be your dream situation? But it has to be reasonable. Like there could be some.
I know yours is going to be Harrison Barnes, but I don't think it's reasonable. I think Sacramento needs a small forward. I think Golden State needs one, and I think the Raptors would take him if he. I even think the Pistons would take. I don't think Barnes falls. So I guess my reasonable dream. I would maybe add Tyler Zeller to the list of 4 guys I just picked, but I do not. You know what my dream is? And I don't know.
Trading the 10th pick?
Yes. Well, and moving up. The Washington Wizards are not enamored with, you know, with this draft. what would it take to move from 10 to 3?
So you can take Bradley Beal and make my head explode?
Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Well, take, if I offered them the 10th pick, next year's first-round pick, unconditional, because I don't really care at this point, and if I took Andre Blatch back, who's their worst contract, and then they could amnesty somebody else or whatever, could I move to 10 to 3? Could I walk out of this draft with Anthony Davis and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist? That would be the first thing I'm trying to get into that top 3 to 5 to get the second guy, and I'm taking back bad con, because again, I don't think I'm really contending for 3 years. So I'll take back, you know, your bad contracts. I'll give up future first round pick, whatever. And so that's my dream. I move up and I think if Washington, maybe I switch Ariza for Blatch, and now they got another veteran for win now. I take back their worst contract. I give them, you know, maybe one of my young prospects as well. Maybe I give them, you know, Grievous as a backup or Xavier Henry. I give them future first round picks. That's my absolute dream that I think is somewhat possible.
Yeah. So, you know what I would actually consider doing? I mean, I would see if Boston was willing to trade us Rajon Rondo for Eric Gordon once he's re-signed and Jack.
Okay.
But that has nothing to do with number 10. That was something that popped in my head. So my dream for number 10, yeah, I think it's still possible Harrison Barnes falls. I know you think the Kings really want him, and I mean, I don't think it's that possible, but it no one thought that Paul Pierce was going to fall to 10.
Right.
So, I mean, this kind of stuff does happen sometimes, especially since all the workouts are going on right now. And Barnes he is an athletic freak, so he's not likely to fall that far, but it could happen. But I don't know. My dream. Yeah, I don't think I have a dream, because 10 is just too far out of like most of the reach of the best.
Well,
dreams,
let me ask you this. You turned this down in our last podcast, but that was raced. Let's say he falls to 7. The Warriors are going to lose their own first-round pick in future years. Utah is going to probably get it next year.
Mm-hmm.
Harrison Barnes is sitting there at 7. Golden State says, give us the 10th pick and your first-rounder next year, and you can move up to 7 and take Harrison Barnes.
I make that trade now.
Now you do. Okay.
Well, see, you say now I do, but I distinctly remember making a condition that Anthony Davis wasn't on the team, because now that Anthony Davis is on the team, the level of talent on this team just rose to the point where next year we're not getting a top 10 pick. We're probably looking at best 10 at best
in a very weak draft. I mean,
right.
There's four guys I like in next year's draft, and it's not a certainty at all that all of them come out.
Right. So it's a different situation now. If we were looking at, you know, having Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and having the opportunity to also move up and take Thomas Robinson with both of sending our pick from next year and this pick, I wouldn't have done that. Because I don't think bringing in Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Thomas Robinson is going to have the impact that Anthony Davis plus anything would have. I think that Davis is that big of a difference maker.
So I think we agree on that. I think ideally we would look to move. I know a lot of people have suggested taking the 10th pick and moving back, but I think we're both saying that our first thing would be to move up and to get one of these other, what do we say, six – top one of these other top six guys to pair with them.
Yeah, I think you put deals in place with guys with different teams. Like if you call up Cleveland and see if there's some way you can work. If Michael Kidd-Gilchrist falls to you, what would it take for us to pry that? Or, you know, right, you call Golden State because that's a good example. What would it take from us to get, you know, Harrison Barnes out of you if he happens to fall to you at that point?
Yeah. Yeah, and then again, another question that we went over in last week's podcast, but now we have unibrow, and hopefully this tape comes out fine. Are you more or less likely to take a risk at 10? And I guess specifically I'll go with somebody like Perry Jones. If you know you got a surefire home run in your back pocket with Anthony Davis, are you now more likely to take a gamble on a boom or bust guy like Perry Jones?
I think I am. I mean, I just said Damian Lillard, and I think he's a boom or bust guy.
See, I don't think he bust. I think he's Mo Williams or Lou Williams, but I can't see a situation in which he bust. I could see a situation in which Perry Jones is Jonathan Bender and never makes an impact. I can't see Lillard not being at least a seventh man who could
support. Okay. Oh, so, well, I don't, I mean.
I'm talking Alexander bust.
No, I don't. I would never do one of those. And Perry Jones, I don't think. I think Perry Jones is probably close to that for me. I can't think of anyone else in that area. Maybe that kid from Iowa,
Royce White.
Royce White, who's like got all the talents in the world. His numbers look fantastic, but he's scared of flying.
Like, yeah, and like, he, I mean, he also had some issues. I mean, he was on Ohio State for a reason. There was a great article in ESPN where Scott Hoiberg kind of put together a bunch of misfits and ragtag bunch. And, I mean, he had, I believe it was marijuana problem. I mean, he's had some issues. So it wasn't just that. But, yeah, I think, what's his face? Doug Gottlieb had Royce White as the fifth guy on his list today. Top okay. 30 prospects. So talent wise, yeah. So you would be more likely to take a gamble on a guy like that at 10 now that we have Anthony Davis in our back pocket.
Yeah, I think so. So, hey, I noticed you didn't have John Henson in your list. What happened there? Is it just because he's too similar physically to Anthony Davis?
I really don't see the fit. And yeah, I don't think it's again, I think Henson's one of those guys that would have needed to get a lot of minutes. You know, I think it's kind of that theory of the guys who need to develop. One of the major things they need is minutes at a constant position in a specific role. And I just don't think Henson would have it. I still love the guy and I hope he goes to the right team, but I just don't see him and Davis as a pair.
So this is going to make you probably roll your eyes. You know what I'm actually really excited to see out there next year? I don't know if it'll happen. Because there's going to be a lot of changes this offseason, I'm sure.
The eye on Anthony Davis?
No. Anthony Davis playing next to Al-Farouq Aminu. Oh. And my reasoning, and this is, so I'm going to promise the third post in the near future in this podcast, so you people are getting real lucky here. Anthony Davis, no question, he's a defensive master. He's his rebound rates are great. He's got all kinds of skills that are just going to make him a really destructive force on the defensive end. If you look at all of the Hornets' advanced statistics, there's one player on the team who improved the Hornets' total rebound rate more than any other, who improved their defensive numbers more than any other, who improved their block rate, and stunningly, when he was on, they had the lowest free throw rate, giving up free throws for opponents, of anyone on the team except for one, and that's Al-Farouq Aminu. He had a huge defensive impact on the team.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, okay, so let's say forget about positions again. Aminu and Davis are two pieces of your future front court. The type of player or specific type of guy that you pair those two with to make that front court go?
You need a burly guy, and it all depends. Again, this is a game of matchups. I mean, in some situations, you'll need a bigger guy to take on stronger players. Like, there's no way that if you put Okafor out there with those two guys, that I think you're going to be able to handle a front court of, like, the Lakers. But the Lakers is one team. I think you could handle almost any other front court in the league with those guys. I think actually this is weird because I don't think of him as a center. I think Ione would be wonderful with those two guys. Because if you put him in the high post and let those guys do the working on the wings and down low, doing the defense, offensively he would get them easy buckets.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that. I mean, you're right. I cannot wait to see the touch passes from Ione to Davis. Those are going to be gorgeous. He's going to be stuffing those things in the rim left and right. But I don't know. I mean, and I guess this is the exact same thing I was just kind of semi-gushing over earlier with the idea of Henson. I mean, I just really like long defensive forwards. And, I mean, it's not that much different in my mind of rolling in with Anthony Davis and Al-Farouq Aminu between, as, you know, Henson and Davis.
And how about, I mean, are we now down to officially 0% that Chris Kaman is? I mean, I know the irony is you already said Carl Landry's gone, but he was so excited on Twitter that the Hornets got the first pick. I don't really understand what it means for him, but
I think that was his death knell.
Are you officially at 0% on Chris Kaman as well? Okay, actually, let me ask it to you like this. If Chris Kaman and Okafor, you could just throw the contracts away, which one of those two would you have on this team next year? Forget about contracts.
Oh, so it doesn't matter what I'm paying them at all.
Let's just say both of them would take
a
$12 million deal.
I don't know. I can't make that. I can't make the decision. I mean, it's. I want to say Kaman, but the man is such a turnover machine and takes such bad shots. The team needs somebody to shoot, so I kind of want to say Kaman. And then Okafor, he's blah.
Yeah.
So I have a real hard time picking either of them. Honestly, if I could get rid of both of them and have another option, I would go with that. But I don't really have that either.
You do. So here, Okafor.
Here, Amnesty Okafor and offer JaVale McGee a wonderful, huge, gigantic contract and run with McGee, Al-Farouq Aminu, and Davis. It'd be the longest freak show on the planet.
Right, and then teams just absolutely packing the paint and Gordon having no lanes to operate in.
Wait, are you worrying about the offensive end?
Yeah, right? It's about that. I think eventually, I think the way, and this is just the way I see the NBA going, I think that this Hornets team, the roster is fluid, and again, I'm looking 2-3 years in the future. If they keep Gordon is your scoring guard, and Anthony Davis, to me, is playing the five at the end of games and in the most critical stretches with four more perimeter-oriented guys. So to me, Kaman fits that a little bit better, where I actually liked him better facing up from like 14 to 16 feet this year than I liked him on the post. I don't know specifically if the stats show that.
No,
my eye test says that that's where he was at his best.
Yeah, so he actually converted shots better closer to the post, which was a little surprising, but his turnover rate tripled when he was in the post.
Yeah. So,
which,
yeah. So again, I don't really get bogged down into positions, but I think that I think Anthony Davis is going to be the biggest guy on the court, whatever that position means to you. He'll be the biggest guy on the court when the Hornets are really good and when they're in crunch time.
Right.
So, you know, to me, neither one of those guys are long-term, and eventually, you know, I'm looking for, you know, a more burly guy that could hit the jumper, and ironically, you know, that kind of is Carl Landry. He just can't rebound that well, but, you know, to me, I would love to pair him with somebody like Paul Millsap. Again, I don't care about positions. You know, at the end of games, you give me Paul Millsap doing all the nasty, dirty work and that could extend it to the outside or play down low. To me, that's the perfect guy to pair in the front court with Anthony Davis, at the end of games. So,
what do you think of Al Jefferson?
No, only because I think he is primarily in the low block. I think he holds on to the ball too much. I think a lot like what Kevin Garnett has experienced when he's had success and what Tim Duncan is experiencing now, I envision the Hornets as a team. I don't see their offense you know, having the ball just stay in one area or one side of the court. Eventually, right. they're going to be a team that swings the ball around, that there's a lot of movement, that Davis, you know, sucks the defense in the way that Tyson Chandler did when he rolled to the basket, and you have a lot of movement. And I just think Al Jefferson just holds on to the ball for far too much and slows that down, so I don't see him as a fit.
Okay.
But how exciting is this?
This is very exciting.
Like, I actually care about next year. I don't have to look to the future posts.
Let me ask you this question. How many minutes from now until the owners of the Orlando Magic call up the Hornets and say, we'd like to trade you Dwight Howard for the first pick of the draft?
I think they have already put that out to every team with a legit chance of winning it.
Yeah.
I know you said you would take it. You know,
No, I said I would take it if he signed a 5-year extension.
Right, no, and even if Dwight did that, I think I don't think the Hornets would do it even with the 5-year extension. I don't see, unless they hear through back channels that Chris Paul would definitely come back if Dwight and Gordon were on the team next summer, but I don't know. I can't see it. But yeah, I think the Magic are smart. They're not getting a better deal because their best deal is probably Andrew Bynum, and that's just going to leave them where? As a 5-6 seed with another malcontent center that he's a free agent too. I mean, if you've only got 1 year with Dwight or 1 year with Bynum, why not just hold on to Dwight?
Yep. No, I agree entirely.
Yeah, but no, I really can't see a scenario in which the Hornets – you know, don't have Anthony Davis. And I guess just, you know, moving forward with that, it's just about thinking about how to put this team together. But how exciting is it? Again, I keep comparing to Tim Duncan. I say that he's the best big man prospect since Tim Duncan 15 years ago. I mean, what better guys to have building a team where you have the next Tim Duncan than Dell Demps and Monty Williams?
Yeah. No, I mean, so the one skill that Dell Demps has completely settled my mind that he has is to be able to take mediocre players and turn them into slightly better mediocre players, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And when you have your superstars in place, that is the number one skill you have to have. You have to be able to identify those guys that you can go out and trade your lesser performers and get slightly better performers and keep improving them and improving them, and eventually you've got a great team.
And I think that might be lost in all this, but I want to bring it up here. I mean, I don't know about you, but if the Hornets get picks 6 and 10 this year and they're a middling team again next year, Monty and Dell's contracts are up. And the way that Dell was kind of treated and what he had to put up with for that year – Monty, we already see that he was going to become a hot commodity. I don't know about you, but there was a part of me that if this draft process didn't go well, that those two guys, who I think are even more important than Eric Gordon, could have been gone. Mm-hmm. Am I thinking too much of this, or is getting Anthony Davis essentially lock those two guys up, you know, and make them want to stay for the next 5 or 6 years, even after all they've been through?
I think you have just improved your chances of holding on to lots of talent in New Orleans, which we could not have held on to before.
And I mean, is Anthony Day, do you see, we always hear this cliche, even though it doesn't usually play out, but guys want to play with this guy. They said it about Steve Nash. They said it about Chris Paul, even though it never really came true.
Well, they never had any room either.
Yeah. You have all these guys recruiting each other. Can you see in 3 or 4 years if Davis is this, you know, defensive juggernaut who's unselfish, who's one of the top players? I mean, is this going to be a guy who not only, you know, Monty and Dell want to stay for, but is going to attract, you know, guys to the Big Easy in the way that even Chris Paul didn't?
I think that is a much overblown thing. So, no, honestly. I think players still follow the money most of the time. Now maybe he goes to the Olympics and makes some good buddies there, and something happens like what happened in Miami. But I'm not holding my breath about that. In general, I mean, the reason why Chris Paul didn't attract anybody to come play with him was because they were paying Peja Stojakovic $70 billion over 4 years and had no ability to sign anybody.
Mm.
So it's as long as they keep the flexibility, though, I think they can sell this market. The idea of large markets, I think, is also overblown. As long as they have some talent on the roster that can clearly already get you to compete for the NBA, for actual spot in the playoffs, you will be able to bring in talent.
I didn't want to think about this possibility because the possibility would have got me so excited. But now that it's actually here and you could see kind of the future with having an owner now, having, again, what I say is one of the best prospects to come along in years, the flexibility that Dell has been able to maintain along with the youth on this team. And the ESPN does all these future rankings things or whatever.
Yeah.
If we're talking about the next 10 years, starting next year, are there more than 3 or 4 franchises that you think are right now in a better position over the next 10 years than the New Orleans Hornets?
Over the next 10 years?
10 years. Like, and when I say that, I'm talking about just titles.
Oklahoma City.
Right.
Miami.
Right. Would you rather be a Chicago Bulls fan right now or a New Orleans Hornets fan? If you're going to be if you've got season tickets for the next 10 years, would you rather be a Bulls fan or a Hornets fan?
Right now with, Rose's health, a Hornets fan.
Right. I'm trying to think of other teams, Portland, Utah, these were teams that I was worried about were building, not worried about at all anymore. I mean, I'm trying to think Denver Nuggets. I mean, really, in the Western Conference, outside of Oklahoma City, again, we can't predict the future entirely, but am I crazy in thinking that this team should be in the top 5 the next time the ESPN comes out with those power rankings?
Yeah, I agree with you. There's a couple of teams I could think of that are like Utah you brought up. I don't think Utah's far off from the Hornets. But you're right. I mean, they did just leap to the very top.
Yeah. No,
So what we need to do is get Eric Gordon signed to a 1-year tender. And next year, knock James Harden's socks off with a max contract offer and sign him over. And I mean, the unibrow and the beard.
Oh,
that would propel you to unbelievable heights.
All kind of facial hair.
Right, be awesome.
Yeah, no, I think it's absolutely bright. Honestly, I wouldn't. Yeah, Miami and Oklahoma City. I really can't think of another franchise that I would rather be a fan of over these next 10 years. I really think that by 2015, Anthony Davis will be a top 3 player in the league. And, I have so much faith. And I mean, I saw Dell and Monty work minor miracles with garbage.
Right.
And now they're going to have all this flexibility. They're going to have the right kind of superstar. The ability to lock up Gordon or, get something of value in return for him, an owner. I really can't think of any other franchises that I would rather be a fan of right now.
So I'm going to give you a piece of homework.
Do it.
Because you wanted that trade with Washington, bring back Andre Blatch.
Yes.
So just so before people say something like this, because I know someone's going to say it, yeah, do that, and then amnesty Andre. We can't amnesty
right.
Andre Blatch. You can only amnesty people on your own team. But there is that other option that people forget about that was part of the CBA. The stretch provision. Can you do that with players who aren't on your roster as the time of the CBA?
I don't think so. I think you could only use any of those cap wiping. Because the reason those are set up is essentially to say, hey, look, you signed these contracts before this new CBA, so you didn't know what you were getting into, so we'll give you a way to get off the hook, but only for those. So I'm pretty sure. But But even so, if I'm getting, I mean, because this is the argument I always make. If I'm getting Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, even if I have to take back Blatch's salary, which I think is like $8 million, I'm paying Kidd-Gilchrist, Anthony Davis, and Andre Blatch like $17
million. Right.
So I'm so underpaying Anthony Davis and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist that I don't mind basically eating that money, you know, for Blatch and waiting. So if I could get Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, I eat that contract and go to the Wizards and offer them as much as I can to get up there.
Yeah.
I mean, I would really be curious if they would do Ariza, a future first round pick, maybe even two, you know, we can't give them consecutive years. But maybe even two future first round picks.
No, now you're getting silly. Kidd-Gilchrist isn't that good of a player.
What do you mean I'm getting silly? I'm throwing in a 2015 first round pick, which will probably be 26.
Yeah, Kidd-Gilchrist. Now you're giving away a lot of future assets for a guy who we have no idea if he's going to be that great.
With it, but when I give up the 2015 pick, now you're all worried because that's going to be the pick.
That's right.
But no, I would be really curious if they really want to go the veteran route. And I, you know, like I said, Ariza, maybe Xavier Henry, the 10th pick, and a future first round pick or two to move up from 10 to 3. And I take Blatch back. I'd really be curious. And, you know, I would do that in a second.
Right. Yeah. All right. So I guess. I guess we're done with the excited podcast.
Yeah, I got to go tear down my CP3 Fathead. I know most won't believe that I still have it up, but just haven't found the heart to pull it down. But it's a new era pulling down my CP3 Fathead. And, yeah, made my wife one other promise.
So I'll let you go real quick then. Thanks, everybody, listening to In the Know.
So will she.
Right, I'm sure. Probably locked the door already. So thanks everybody for listening to In the Know, and we'll have lots of unibrow coverage, and then maybe something about the 10th pick too.
And thanks to Darius for that banner. I think that was the last strike of good luck. That's an awesome banner.
First pick.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.